Hello, everyone, and welcome to another installment of Wealth Reborn, which is our podcast with Alpha Omega Wealth. This is Joe Pantozzi welcoming you. And today, our special guest is John Holzman. John and his family reside in Denver, Colorado, and is a business owner who has an extremely sharp interest in creating and perpetuating and growing not only wealth, but generational wealth. And we're going to be talking today about the ideas, the thoughts, the challenges in building generational wealth and perpetuating it to the next generation in such a way that that generation can take an interest in the values that we have an interest in seeing brought forward. So please welcome John, and I welcome your kind attention.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
How are you?
I'm good. How's the summer treating you? How's the virus treating you? How's your family, first of all?
Yeah, thanks. We're doing great, and I think you recognize we're down here in Belize, about, not even 1,000 yards north of the property that you once owned.
Yeah. Technically, still own.
Oh, do you?
Well.
Oh, really?
They're making their payments, and I've sold both properties, and we have them on a payment plan. But they, there's no way they can default because they gave me half down. I've been doing a lot of work for people for a long time, over four decades, right?
And wow.
Where we have a huge gap in our planning is where folks are hitting a block wall that either cannot get their head around leaving their children an inheritance because they don't want to leave their children to be, you know, Paris Hiltons. They don't want to leave a sum of money because the children won't be responsible. Well, it was your responsibility to teach the children, right? While you were building the wealth, while you were building the company, while you were amassing fortune in whatever way you want to look at it, you're supposed to bring your kids along so that they could learn what you're doing, how you're doing, and why you're doing it.
But
I'm not getting that traction from people. And it's not like I can carry on a one-man path here to financially be the savior for 300 million people. There's a lot of things going on. And Americans are very passionate about making money. They're very passionate about spending it. And they don't seem to have a vision beyond their own nose.
Mm-hmm.
This is a bigger challenge than I have the ability to meet. And all I can do is continue to talk.
Whoa. Oh, my goodness.
That is the rule. That's not the exception. That is the rule. I've got parents who tell me that their kids aren't responsible enough to receive the money. I've got clients who tell me they don't want to tell their siblings that they are the guardians or the trustees for their estate because they might run away with the money. Well, then you named the wrong person. There's only a handful of people I know who have even begun to address this. And far and away, you know, because of all the writing that I know you've done and all the time you've spent thinking about it, you're the guy.
Oh my goodness. That's amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. It's sad.
Yeah.
And then I've, in addition to that, over the past year and a half, I've had an inordinate amount of people die in my life. Not all clients. A couple of mm-hmm. them were people in their 50s from my church. A couple of them were relatives. A few of them were clients and family of clients. And I look at financial pieces that I've been responsible for, either investments or insurance or both. And then I look at their estate planning documents and what they left in terms of an organized strategy and then and a communication method to let their heirs and their trustees and their guardians and their executors know exactly what to do. And I mean, it's absent. The logic is absent. It's just an empty space.
Whoa, here I am having read and thought about and studied all that I have. And what you're telling me is completely mind blowing to me. I had no idea. It's heartbreaking.
I could go on. I could spend an hour just scratching the surface to tell you that there are, you know, depending on how you count financial advisors, financial counselors, financial planners, brokers, investment people, insurance agents, I look at them and I say 80% of them don't have a net worth to speak of.
Right.
And they're giving financial advice to people who have net worths that are multiples, worlds ahead. I mean, not that you need to be worth $100 million to someone who's worth $100 million, but you at least have to have some personal experience with your own net worth, with your own business management, with your own conversation and strategizing with your kids, with your family, with your siblings. I mean, get together with your siblings and talk about creating some kind of a family strategy to wealth.
Right.
It's frustrating to me because I wind up putting a lot of helping clients put a lot of money on the table, and I don't get participation from the legal team, mostly from the legal team.
What does that mean?
Well, most living trusts that I see are leaving a lump sum to the kids when they're 25. They take care of the HEMS standard, health, education, maintenance, support.
Yeah.
Up until the kids are out of college, let's say.
Right.
And then they're going to get a lump sum. Maybe it's equal to a third of the estate when the kid's 25. Maybe it's half the estate that's left when they're 30 and the estate when they're 35. And I mean, that is the extent of the estate plan that's put together.
Oh.
Well, where is the generational legacy? Where is the multi-generational wealth plan? It doesn't exist.
Right.
Yeah, so Americans are, you know, they're working 30, 40, 50 years to build something, if they are building something. It's not,
right.
Most people are just working to survive.
Right.
And it doesn't make a difference if you make $30,000 a year or $300,000 a year. We're spending the majority of it just living because we keep on following Parkinson's law. If you remember that from Nelson's book, a luxury once enjoyed becomes a necessity, right?
And
no matter how much people earn, they're going to wind up spending 10% more, 20% more. Because why? Well, because they know that they're going to earn more next year. We're going to continually do better. And so I don't really need to save when I'm in my 20s because I'll be doing so much better when I'm in my 30s. And then you have excuses year after year after year and generation after generation. Well, I can't save now because I've got kids in private school. Well, I can't save now because I've got two kids in college. Well, I can't save now because I'm building the house in Belize. I can't save now because fill in the blank. And maybe you haven't paid attention to the statistics.
Honestly, yeah, I should probably spend some more time with a guy like you because this is like, we've almost lived a fairy tale life or something because our whole family's values are just different from that. I mean, from the beginning, you know, there's Buford in his second half book. Well, our second half was the first half, and then we became wealthy. and our lifestyle really, you know, it did change. You know, there came a point where, hey, we can afford to go on cruises. So we did more travel, you know, and we've had some other expenses, but expenses never expanded to meet our capacity. Right. Instead, our giving expanded. And yeah, there's just a very different mentality. One of the joys of being down here, there's absolutely no pressure to show off from our perspective. You know, in fact, if anything, we've never wanted to be particularly flashy, but now we realize, whoa, our house actually is a landmark, partially because it's so tall here. People go, oh, yours is that White House with the stairway. We go, oh, well, partially also because it's only one of five that are on this side of the island, you know. So, but though there's a lot of building going on, so hopefully soon we'll be, in one sense, hopefully soon we'll be kind of submerged in a community. But honestly, in some ways, we're kind of like there seems to be all the building is going around us rather than a little further away.
Yeah.
We want it to be away from people. anyway, but hearing this stuff that you're telling me, it's like, why? Well, anyway, I think I can speak to these people, but there are such fundamental value issues, you know, with our kids. I remember the first time, well, for years, I was going, man, why is it so hard for us to give away what we want to give? We wanted to give 50% of our income. There's
your net income or your EBITDA? Oh, the AGI, adjusted gross income.
Yep. And, but it was, we were struggling. It's like, why is this so hard? Oh, it's because we were pouring everything right back into the company, and we would only distribute 10%. So we had to, we started to distribute more, but it was all to charity rather than to us. And but then there was, okay, how do you get your kids more involved? And they were still in high school. So at that point, I said, well, let's have them participate in the giving. And at that time, I think their share, and I don't remember how we determined that these were their shares of the giving, but we gave them checks for, I think it was like $19,000 a piece to give. It said, this check is for you to determine where you want to give it for charity. And one of our daughters burst into tears. She said, this is a down payment on a house at that time. And you expect me as a high schooler to, well, no, we'll work with you on this. But it was a jarring experience for her, you know, whoa, this is a major responsibility. This is a weight of responsibility. To be honest with you, we never did it again. And we need to, I think we're really at a point where we need to start doing that again.
Yeah.
Bringing them more into some of this decision-making process. But yeah, they recognize this is a stewardship. It's a responsibility. That's the way I've taken it. And frankly, it's a heavy responsibility. This is not our money. We are stewards before God. We are to be caretakers. We are fiduciaries. Yep. And a fiduciary, it has no right to go, well, this is mine, and oh, here, you can have the 10%. No, it's all God's, and He gives us. He's very generous with us, but
yes.
Anyway, it's a different approach. And then, yeah, teaching your kids, what is this all about? How are you to give? We have some discussions about these things regularly as a family. We're still growing in that, but yeah, we're kind of looking out. How are you doing? One of our children is not following Jesus and has no interest. And so then the question is, okay, as one of my reading mentors said, why would you, who have been given these materials and who've been these material blessings and who have been giving to the causes that you believe in, why would you pass your inheritance then to a son or daughter who is going to give them to things that are diametrically opposed to what you gave them to? That's kind of weird, to put it mildly.
Yes.
So, but how do you handle this appropriately? I've had some people warn me not to cut off this son, and I understand. And you know, we don't want to. We need to love him, and we will. At the same time, being a good steward, how do you handle that? We don't have answers to that question at this time, per se. But these are some of the questions that we are working with.
Well, it's important to me, for as long as I've known you, that you're ahead of that curve because you're thinking about it, you're praying about it, you're considering it, you're seeking wise counsel. You've got a burden to answer a question. And
right.
it doesn't necessarily have to come to you in a bolt of lightning. Maybe it takes 10 years to get an answer to one question, which is a generational question.
Right.
And I think it's important, and it just so happened to share the same thought with you, which in the way you're leading it, at least, is if kids don't share my values, I want to put some kind of a framework in order to help them survive physically and medically and educationally, and, you know, put a roof over their head, put clothes on their back, and give them the bare necessities of life to a point. But in order for there to be a generational aspect and a generational strategy, then the kids have to share my passion for something. We have to have some common interest. And it doesn't need to be parallel. It doesn't need to be a rubber stamp. The kids don't need to look like clones of me, God forbid.
Correct.
But I want them to have the thought that all this wealth was put into my hands so that I can do good. Because a friend of mine said to me a long time ago,
and I
kept this in my heart, you know, capital is the ability to do good. And the more capital you have, the more good you can do. That is the purpose of it. And so I want my kids and my heirs to share those values. because we need right. we need more people with an outward focus in this world who are interested in doing good with and for others.
Yep.
So there are a couple of things that always stood out to me. One was when you started writing those emails several years ago, and I believe it was to your grandson. And I think yep. they approached maybe 80 or 85 entries.
I don't think so. I think I got into the upper 60s, but
it's upper 60s.
And yeah, I'm about to start over almost. His younger brothers and one of his cousins, who is female, are of an age now where I'm sensing, okay, let me do a second draft, if you will.
Sure. So what do you call that?
And I'll probably include you all.
Great. So, yeah, please. So what do you call that body of work? Because I had spoken to you either in person or by email, and I said, well, you just wrote a book. All you have to do is edit it because you had searchable
yeah.
links
oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
references. It was fantastic.
The whole course, if you will, the idea is it's called Ready to Prosper with a numeral two instead of the T-O.
Right.
So being prepared for prosperity. You know, I'm not guaranteeing anybody that you're going to be prosperous, but at least you should be prepared in case God should send you prosperity. I will, let me say this, just recently here with what's going on with COVID, now the revolutionary fervor of the socialists in our midst, I seriously start wondering whether we're at the end of an era, and some of what I want to teach may be out of date. I mean, I've had concern about, for example, hyperinflation since I was 10 or 11 because of, well, I told the story in one of my emails about inheriting my grandfather's stamp collection, which went through the German hyperinflation of 1920-21. But now with what the federal government in the United States has just done as a result of COVID, there's just insanity in the marketplace, it seems to me. I also observe how truly the wealthy are well taken care of, that the average people have a minor portion comparatively. The mentality on all sides is funny to read. For example, wasn't it Nancy Pelosi was infuriated that these millionaires were receiving, I think it was $600 a week or something like that. So certain people who received lots of money were going to qualify for unemployment benefits. You're right. Seriously? Do you think that you think somebody who's a millionaire really, I mean, I hate to put it this way, but truly the fact that they might receive $30,000 in a year in $600 increments weekly, they probably hardly even recognize it. It's kind of like, well, I'll take it. Thank you. But, yeah. But it's not. Right. It was like, actually, Street and I, early in our company, our software rounded things a little strange. I think they rounded everything per item. And one of our customers took the time to note that, hey, if you would have totaled everything up and then rounded, I would have spent 14 cents less. So clearly I know why you're doing this. It's so that you can make more money. Like, oh, you got to be kidding. Yeah. Yeah. But it's that kind of, the 14 cents to her was a big deal. And the $30,000 to most Americans is a huge deal.
Yes.
But yes, to others, it's kind of like, okay, it was sloppy on the part of the Congress to write the law the way it is, but do you rewrite the law to take care of making sure that these people for whom it really is not an issue won't possibly benefit from it? Maybe
right.
It's not worth the time.
Let me bring you back to this Ready to Prosper. Tell me what your objective is, first of all. Tell me who your audience is. Are you going to share it with multiple members of your family, multiple generations? And what is it that you want to accomplish with it?
So my concept for Ready to Prosper actually preceded this series of emails. I've wanted to write something for young people, high schoolers, and their parents, because that's who our primary audience is, a homeschool company has been for, you know, since we began. And so I started writing to my grandson because that was a method by which I could actually write to the audience. And I felt I would be motivated and enabled to write a little more crisply than I would if I just had a generic audience. Sure. So that's where it began. And where this came from was my recognition that I was never prepared to be a good steward of financial wealth. I mean, I was raised in a upper middle class home in some of the best public schools in the nation, starting at, this wasn't the beginning of my elementary education, but the start of my real heavy duty education, late elementary, middle school, was at Stanford University in California. That's where we were living at the time. Mm-hmm. And then finishing in upstate New York. And we were never taught about money. We were never taught about borrowing, about really even about interest and credit. The only thing that I was taught by my parents was that you shouldn't borrow. And then, you know, scriptures, borrower is slave to the lender, and those kinds of basic concepts. And then I've been aware of Dave Ramsey for a long time. But then when the rubber met the road as a business person, 3-4 years in, and our company was growing like crazy, to suddenly discover that, whew, this is a hard thing to have your company double every year in sales and be hurtling towards the ground at the beginning of the sales season, having confidence that sales were going to be there, but I don't have any cash to buy inventory. And so trying to buy your inventory when your sales cycle is as quick as it is, and you only have 30 days to pay when you buy, and in the book industry, especially if a book goes out of print, you might be stuck for months. Now you have a back order. Anyway, we had these problems for several years, at which point I was talking with a banker. He says, John, that's what a line of credit is for. I'm going, no, credit bad, you know, borrowing bad. Mm-hmm. And he convinced me and us that to take the risk, and we borrowed $1 million. It cost us $30,000 to borrow $1 million for 3 months. And the reason it was that expensive is because we had to pay points, initiation costs, and all the rest of it. And, you know, you look at that, you go, wow, that was an expensive loan. But then as a business person, I said, well, wait, but how much did I save? Well, I saved $250,000 in hard costs. I could identify the costs that I saved. In other words, my bottom line went up by $250,000. Well, to pay $30,000 and earn $250,000 in 3 months, I'll do that all day long if I can.
Sure.
Talk about ROI. Well, but nobody ever taught me to think about ROI on a loan. And then, you know, that was back in the early 90s. It run forward many years. The whole idea of incorporation, what does that mean in terms of tax implications? Alone, let alone other potential advantages. But going on then into the mid-2000s, well, actually 2013 was when I was first introduced to the possibility that life insurance might be useful as a cash management tool. It was presented poorly. I could mention the author's name. It just didn't make any sense. I wrote a letter saying, wait a second, this doesn't even make sense. She said, well, I found analytic types disagree with me. We'll just have to agree to disagree. I'm going, math doesn't lie. I'm sorry. but then 2 years later, I ran into the concept again through a group called Palm Beach Research. And that's when I was introduced to the more broadly understood or phrased infinite banking. And then I studied it I actually literally took 1,000 hours in 2015 studying this whole concept of using high cash value, overfunded life insurance as a cash management tool. And as I got involved with those people, the people who were involved in that industry, that's when I started learning about so many other concepts with respect to money, interest, and that's where this really came from.
So how do you, I know this is a question that I keep on asking myself and keep on challenging my clients to consider, how do you transmit that desire, that sense of inquisitive desire to gain that information and to move it from generation to generation?
That's an excellent question. I think the way I've attempted to do that is by telling the stories, to tell, this is my experience. This is how I learned it. Each chapter or each email that I sent, I tried to have at least one hook story. Generally speaking, I succeeded. I got into a lot of really heavy duty technical details sometimes. And then the story kind of faded because I was really getting into the math. I believe in proving my points, and some of those emails may need to be addenda or something, but right. But to attract the attention and the interest, I think you can do that through story. Here's my experience. Your mileage may vary, but a well-told story is, I think, always going to be of interest.
So in addition to telling the story and to maybe rewriting those 60 plus installments to create Ready to Prosper, where does the family constitution come into play here?
So honestly, that is kind of where I cut out, right? I never quite got into that. And we're on a pause there to a certain degree.
Okay.
The counselor that I mentioned to you, the guy with UBS, he actually encouraged us to take a break from that stuff. He said, you know, the guys that you've been listening to, and I could repeat their names here, but they're great in theory, but he said, I've dealt with a lot of their families that they've worked with, and it's no panacea doing things the way they're talking about, because it has to do with relationship. It has to do with maintaining family integrity amongst the members. And so that's what he's working with us on. I think that we have been blessed with a pretty integrated family where we are holding together quite well, and we understand each other quite well. Even the one who's wandering, he wants to be part with us, and so we maintain relationship. Yeah, the Constitution isn't going to be a panacea, and I appreciate that. But yeah, I've kind of taken a break on that for a while.
Gotcha.
And I don't know whether and when we will get back to it.
Mm-hmm. I'm happy to hear you tell me that the one son who's kind of off on his own path still has a connection with you, because I mean that's the whole ball game. Because if you don't communicate, you're never going to reconcile any kind of differences or conflicts. So I'm glad that the lines of communication are open, because at the end of the day, the affection is there.
You know, it's been a wonderful thing. He started calling us once a week. And so Sarita and I spend an hour or a little bit more each Thursday morning. He calls us up. And so there are these times to just share what's going on in life for all of us. And so that's good. And then of course we have our annual family fun weeks, and Lord willing, we'll be able to get up to the States when it's scheduled to occur in October. We may not be allowed out of here, and so we're not sure we're going to make it, but at least not in person. It may have to be by Zoom. But
oh boy, that would be interesting. Is there some kind of a restriction on travel?
Yeah, we can. There is no human beings cross the borders here.
Oh,
they're allowing shipments in and out, goods, but no passengers in or out. Okay, so and nobody crosses the border at all.
So no tourism right now.
Correct. Devastating to the economy here. But again, it's amazing. In the midst of all that, there's just a calm here. People are amazing.
Well, you know, it may be that the locals are getting a breather from the tourists.
It may be. Belize has the lowest rate of COVID problems amongst all the Americas. For 8 or 10 weeks, there was a 1 week period in which cases showed up, and then nothing for 8 or 8 weeks, and then we've had three more. Maybe it's four. I think it was 22 a few days ago, 1 week, where certain people had come in. So I guess it's not an absolutely hermetically sealed country, but actually somebody claimed that there was some smuggling took place, and foolishly got though.
Yeah.
But as best as they can do, they're holding the borders shut. So
yeah.
Whew, but that is, since so much of the economy is based on it, it's pretty devastating.
Right. So I hope you don't mind if we could So one thing that I was really happy to hear you talk about very, very early in today's call was telling me where your heart is at. And I remember this from a lot of conversations we've had. And that is that you and Sarita have always wanted to give a large percentage of your income to causes that you're that are special to you. And one of them had to do with the 1040 window.
Correct. Yep. Or as we also call it, the tribals, Hindus. It used to be unchurched Chinese, but Chinese church has really expanded. So now they kind of call it the unchurched, maybe more broadly, Muslims, Buddhists. But this, certainly the THM and the B, but thumb peoples, THUMB, that's the acronym by which we try to remind ourselves. And so actually we have Thumb International, we have these multiple LLCs, investment entities that have Thumb, the THUMB acronym in their name, just to kind of keep it in forefront in our mind. So
what's the M? Yes, what's the M stand for?
Is Muslims.
Got
so,
it.
Yeah, I would love to have more conversations. This is actually, thank you, because you're actually encouraging me to get on the shtick with where being down here has required me to required us to reconfigure our lives quite a bit, and I'm just at the point where I can start really working on this project again.
Okay,
I've been kind of out of it, so this is good. Thank you so much, and
I appreciate you being on. Give my best to Sarita.
And all right.
Your family, I appreciate us keeping the lines open. And hopefully we can be a blessing to each other and other people as well.
Well, thank you, and blessings to you and to your wife and
thanks
the other guys. And I'll look forward to hearing back from you.
Thank you so much. Talk to you soon.
Okay. See ya. Yep. Bye. Yeah.